Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. It's time, Andy, to talk about the Russell Westbrook experience. It's been a rocky one for the Lakers and Lakers fans, but how is Russell's inconsistency impacting the way the Lakers play? We'll talk about that next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I want to thank everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. We really appreciate it. We get this thing up early, so no matter where you are, East Coast, West Coast, working the overnight shift, the Locked On Lakers podcast is there for you every day. Andy and I really appreciate it, all the support we've gotten. Want to let you know, too, that today's episode of Locked On Lakers is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's an unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. Loving it. So a lot that we want to get into, Andy, including one of the strangest feuds, new feuds in NBA history between the Jokic brothers and the Morai twins. That started
the entire Miami Heat, really, they're feuding with. This is just glorious. Absolutely glorious.
So I know you've spent most of your day on this, so we'll make sure we get to it before the end of the show.
Night leading up to this
coming
show.
Out on Monday's NBA action.
That's all I could think about.
And some interesting stuff that's out there about LeBron James and Anthony Davis and whether or not that pairing is in and of itself enough to get the Lakers where they need to be once everybody gets back when it's all said and done. But we want to start with Russell Westbrook because everything, Andy, right now seems to start with Russ. And even before you get into the how's he fitting? What are the plus minus, the impact here, this lineup versus that lineup? I think the one thing that we're all learning is that Russell Westbrook is a lot. And I don't mean this in a way like we didn't know that before, but sort of how you know that like LeBron James is a physical force of nature that kind of you got to see up close before it doesn't translate to TV and then you get it. It's like, oh my God, that's what that is. The extremes of Russell Westbrook.
Like if you're lucky enough, as you and I have been at a Laker game to see Charlize Theron up close, like, you know, from watching her in a movie, like, oh my God, she's gorgeous. Until you see her up close and you're like, oh my God, she is.
Oh,
gorgeous.
Like she she looks better.
Yeah.
In person.
Yes.
Which is saying something because she looks really good in movies. Mm-hmm. But when you see the Westbrook experience now up close, it's exhausting. it is genuinely exhausting, certainly for fans, but I wonder if some of those swings are impacting the Lakers as well. If they're not used to it either. Guys have not played with him. They played against him, but they've not played with him, save, Melo and whatever. But like it is a lot. It is a lot. Russ is a lot.
You know what it is? This word is going to come up a lot, Brian, at least from my vantage point in talking about Russ and just sort of the general vibe you get, which is chaos. And we all have that one friend that we love dearly, and we would be there for that friend, and we know that friend will be there for you. And thus, you are always going to have that friend's back. But it doesn't change the fact that said friend is really effing exhausting, because there's always something with that friend, and that friend often seems to have so much going on because they seem to thrive on chaos. And Russell Westbrook's game, like on the court, off the court, you don't hear a thing about him in terms of ever being a lot, but on the court,
other than like the fashion stuff, but like Godspeed, man, that's awesome.
No, I mean, does fashion, he does a lot of entertainment stuff. Now he does a lot of philanthropy. I mean, like, you've never heard anything about him off the court that hasn't been positive at all.
Right. I mean, but his personal life, he's got kids. He married his high school sweetheart. I mean, there's not a lot there to dislike about the personal life of Russell Westbrook.
But
on
that
any of our business anyway. But yeah,
right.
Go ahead.
But like, as opposed to say like the off the court life of Kyrie Irving. But
yeah,
Russell Westbrook on the court is chaos. Like, there is a lot of chaos that comes with it that I've started to recognize you just have to accept as part of the package, which doesn't necessarily mean accept the results as okay. And obviously there are things that need to be either offset or adjusted, whatever. But even at its best, there's going to be an element of chaos because that's just what Russell Westbrook is as a basketball player.
And, you know, and I think Monday's game is a great example of it. Like, he wasn't uniformly terrible. It wasn't a great game. You know, his shooting 5 of 15 wasn't good. I mean, it was a continuation of a lot of the struggles, but there were other things that were, you know, certainly positive moments. But like, the impact is so disparate. It is so extreme from great play to what the hell. You know, I remember when we had Sam Esfandiar and Andy Liu on to scout Kent Bazemore. Like, that was one of their points. Like, every two or three plays a game, Bazemore is going to do something where you just go WTF. Like, what on earth was that, Kent Bazemore? Westbrook does that all the time, except he's a 38 minute a night guy with the ball in his hands a ton. And you look at it and you go, they won that game on Monday based on Rondo's minutes, not Westbrook. Westbrook was a minus 7 in his minutes. Rondo was a plus, what was it, 20?
20.
So
yeah.
So what I'm figure out is it's not just accommodating Russell's shortcomings, the spacing issues, it's how are they incorporating that chaos, to use the word that you put out there, which is how are they adjusting to the presence of Westbrook and the style and the herky jerkiness of it and the incredible force of it. Like, everything is forceful. The good stuff is forceful. The bad stuff is forceful. And to me, that's sort of an underrated aspect of it that goes along with trying to figure out how to play with Westbrook, even as Russ, I think it's very clear, is trying to do what is asked of him and what is needed of him. Not always successfully, but it's not like he's not invested in what needs to be done to play with AD and LeBron and the rest of this crew.
Well, I mean, he is invested, and I agree with you that he wants to do the right things, but by his own admission, you know, during that press conference that I talked about after the Portland loss, where, you know, he was outwardly frustrated, and, you know, he kept talking about this push-pull of, you know, wanting to do the things that are necessary to make the team better and making those type of adjustments, but always wanting to stay true to himself, and how those two things are, I think, both seemingly and actually in conflict.
To be fair, to Russ, is something that LeBron has said they want him to do. AD, Vogel, right. Everybody says, you know, you got to be you.
Right. I do think a couple things to point out. First of all, if you're looking for that question that you had asked about what the team might do along the way, some of it could just come down to patience. Russell Westbrook has a reputation for really slow starts to seasons and picking them up as the season goes along. And I took a look at some of his splits pre and post All-Star, and that is true for his career. His field goal percentages overall and from three generally get better in the second half. But then I went through specifically the last three or four seasons as Russ has gotten older and he's been changing teams more, players around him have been changing more. He's had to do a lot of adjusting, and you really see it there, like over the last three or four seasons. So there is precedent.
Particularly last year. I mean, last year was, I think, the most pronounced in terms of his performance in Washington, which was terrible in the first half.
Well, you know what? It was the same way in Houston, too.
Yeah.
Second half in Houston, he was a much different player with a much different roster. You know, they cleared out anybody above like 6'6", and, you know, they opened up.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. Absolutely.
They did. And
which, by the way, the Lakers can sort of do by you know, because Anthony Davis, while he's well above 6'6", has attributes of a player who plays at 6'8", 6'9". You know, that's part of what
he began his career as a point guard. And then
I mean, that's what makes him so special is his floor ability at that height.
So, I mean, there is some precedent that with Russ, you know, the best is still yet to come and you just have to wait for it. And also, though, it reminds me, I remember you and I were talking about this yesterday off air before the show, but early on, and I don't remember if this is around the time that there were rumors of the Lakers trading for Russ or the trade had actually happened, but I remember you saying that, like, there was a part of you that was nervous because of, you know, it's a difficult basketball fit potentially, if nothing else, unnecessarily complicated.
Not necessarily what I would have done.
Right. But there was also a part of you that said that you were really excited by this because you love Russell Westbrook. You love watching him play and you're excited at the prospect of seeing him play 82 games a year, to which I said, no, you're not.
Yeah, no, less, as it turns out, less is more.
I said to you, you are excited by the concept of Russell Westbrook, Brian. You are not excited by the actuality of it, because I can promise you, if you want to remain the same fan of Russell Westbrook as you were the last, whatever, 13 years of his career, you don't want him in LA where you will see him warts and all this often.
Yeah. What do they say?
This is never, part of the deal.
Never meet your heroes.
Yeah. Never watch him either.
Yeah. So, all right. So what the Westbrook factor here leads to a really interesting question that was raised by Kirk Goldsberry in a piece this week for ESPN, talking about LeBron James and Anthony Davis and that pairing, which has to this point been historically good for a two-man pairing. So we'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar. I love Thanksgiving. You just get all that great food. It's just pure decadence. You get to eat as much as you want. But leading up to that, Brian, you do want to make sure that you're exercising some responsibility. Don't want to be eating all calories and sugar, which makes it a perfect time for Built Bars, the new holiday dessert. You can feast on something that tastes great, but also feel good about it. Unlike, you know, just eating pie that has upwards of 300 calories before you even add the accoutrement. Built Bars, mostly about 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, plenty of protein. They're low calorie, they're low carb, they're low fat, and they are covered in 100% real chocolate. Great option for when you're feeling hungry. Again, particularly around Thanksgiving, when you know you're going to be doing damage to yourself. And there's nothing like a Built Bar Black Friday. Mark your calendar, folks. Black Friday will be a huge event with all sorts of surprises. I'm looking forward to learning what they are. I have no idea what this is. Do you?
No.
Oh, well.
Don't tell me these. I'm not on the need to know list.
You're not on the board.
No, I mean, I'm just a guy, you know, eating Built Bars.
Just a man trying to offset Thanksgiving. So go to built.com, use the promo code LOCK15, you get 15% off your order. Again, promo code LOCK15, 15% off at built.com.
So much of the premise of the entire roster for the Lakers is the big three are so good that it overcomes fit issues. And then there are certain things that, you know, really even, you know, where the fit is quite good, this pace, the ability to, you know, push the, you know, the floor up and down and play with, as Rob Pelinka would call, thrust. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that is still predicated on the idea that when you boil it down even more, LeBron James and Anthony Davis have been such a successful pairing that if you have those guys supplemented by whatever it is that Russell Westbrook can give you on top of it to make the LeBron minutes better, the non-LeBron minutes better, add a dimension that makes them very difficult to cover. And we've seen it work at times over the course of the first 11 games, that will be enough because ultimately that pairing is really good. Kirk Goldsberry raised that question with ESPN this week. Jovan Buha wrote about sort of the quality of the AD LeBron pairing at The Athletic this week as one of his 10 storylines. We've certainly talked a lot about it. But the question is that enough? That was the one that Kirk Goldsberry asked, and I'll ask you the same question. Is that still fundamentally true, that when you boil it down, AD and LeBron James playing at their peak, if you can get there, makes them championship level almost regardless of what else is around them. Assuming the rest of that's around them is good enough.
Well, this is what really makes it a difficult question to answer. And I don't want to sound like I'm punting on it, but the truth is we don't know, because we have not seen remotely what it looks like with this roster healthy, much less for multitudes of games. I mean, we haven't even seen the whole roster play together. And then some of the elements that have been hurting them, like defensively, for example, like Kendrick Nunn and THT, who are going to be back, I think it is expected, before Trevor Ariza. You know,
if Nunn isn't back before Ariza, things have really gone wrong there. THT should be getting back, should be practicing this week to whatever, whenever they start practicing.
He's been cleared for contact practices. And, you know, while neither one of those guys are anywhere close to lockdown defenders or defensive specialists, you know, Kendrick Nunn, I think, has been kind of a defensive neutral. THT, certain things does well, certain things has not done well at all. There are elements of defense where I could see them or Trevor, when he eventually gets back, helping out, that you don't necessarily immediately think about with the Lakers' issues, but I think could be, you know, an asset. For example, the Lakers are getting killed on the defensive boards. They're giving up tons of second chance points. They're giving up a lot of points in the paint that can come from those second chance points. Just having the longer bodies and arms of THT and Ariza can make a difference there. Having Kendrick
Well, and
Nunn,
also too, you know, improving your point of attack. Part of the reason they're giving up so many points in the paint and so many offensive rebounds is because they are getting slaughtered by opposing point guards.
Right, which I was just about to say. You get THT out there, who I think at times has shown the ability to be a decent point of attack defender. Kendrick mm-hmm. Nunn, if nothing else, is a better point of attack defender than Malik Monk or Wayne Ellington.
Or Russell Westbrook.
At times even Russell Westbrook. Like, it was interesting. I was going through some of the defensive numbers, Brian, for this team, and their defensive rating, depending on whether you go to NBA.com or Basketball Reference, but either way, not as awful as you would expect. It's like middle-ish of the pack.
Yeah, they've been vacillating over the last week between 17th, 14th. I think they opened up today on one of them, on Tuesday at 11 or 12. I've seen 13. So it's not 20. It's better than 27, which is where they used to be.
And then you look at like their, you know, opponent percentages from the field, opponent percentages from three, and they're not great, but they're not dismal either. It's these very specific elements of defense, like sending guys to the line too often, giving up those second chance points, giving up the points in the paint, that bringing back Ariza, even at this stage of his career, assuming he can still give you 15 to 18 quality minutes, THT and Nunn, they can exponentially, incrementally help the defense some to maybe supplement an offense that, even with some of the warts, has not been a problem. The offense has not been the issue.
They're scoring. And here's the question, I think, you know, to kind of tie it back to what we were talking about before, because I think everything you're saying is true. And it's far too early. What we have seen is over the first 11 games is sort of a shopping list of everything that everybody raised their hand and go like, well, that could be a problem. But it hasn't really been balanced by the opportunity to see the places where it could work better and have the continuity to see what it looks like when it all goes well. And, you know, that's the part that we haven't had a chance to really look at. But when you kind of, to bring it back to what Goldsberry was asking and what we were talking about before, what I'm kind of fascinated by is the potential impact that Westbrook has to either enhance the AD LeBron combo or detract from it. And I don't know where that goes, because if he can goose that twosome a little bit, all of a sudden now it's like an already elite group has this extra little element, even if it's not so much Russ himself that drives it or whatever, or Russ that, you know, he's a decidedly distinct third wheel in the big three. Okay. But if there's some element of his presence that makes
he's like
that,
a sidecar on a car instead of a motorcycle.
Yeah. Whatever it is. That to me is the TBD when it comes particularly to that question. Because ultimately for the Lakers, it would be best if the answer is still, yeah, LeBron and AD, if they're playing at an elite level, still provide something that other teams can't, particularly a Brooklyn team, which, by the way, is struggling with no Kyrie Irving. Like, that changes their dynamic. There's the Lakers, and maybe we'll talk about that this week. Lakers are still kind of benefit. They're one team, two teams, starting to really separate themselves going. So, you know, the Lakers have, they do have time to figure this out, plenty of time.
Yeah, and I mean,
that's the question for me. Like,
yeah, and
us impact the quality of the elite twosome that the Lakers have had, because LeBron and AD, statistically speaking, over the last couple seasons when they play together, have been unstoppably elite, like that good. And so I don't know, and there's no way to know the answer to the question, but it's a different framing of it for me that I hadn't quite thought about until this week.
Well, I mean, what gives me some degree of confidence with this moving forward is that we were starting to see signs of Russ, LeBron, and AD, the three of them actually playing well together. And Russ and AD have actually been, I think, pretty good as a two-man pairing. I mean, there have been sloppy moments from it and hiccups and all sorts of stuff. But in terms of them actually being able to fit together, we've seen a lot of evidence of it's working. And the LeBron-Russ minutes together early on have actually often been better just in terms of how they play off each other earlier than I expected, which doesn't mean everything's gone well in those moments, because
And the ultimate impact, Westbrook, the Lakers have really suffered in Westbrook minutes. Like, they've not been good with him before.
No,
and
absolutely.
None of this is to say that you saying like it's improving, that they've been good, the results have been good, because they haven't been. But you know, when you link that to the potential, as you mentioned before, and the expectation that over the course of the season, both the fit will get better and just Westbrook will get better because that's right. What he does, there's definitely hope. People should not give up. There are plenty of reasons to worry, but that doesn't mean you should just pack it in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to be Pollyanna about this at all. I think I've made it pretty clear that as much as I can see what the potential upside is in all of this, you know, you may recall, Brian, when there were just rumors about the Lakers being interested in Westbrook, we did a show. The entire show was dedicated to how ridiculous the rumor was and why that made absolutely no sense for the Lakers. And I think I might have been more adamant than you that this was ridiculous. So,
but I'm generally a more optimistic person than you are. Yeah. So, I like to see the good in things. Anyway, Carmelo Anthony is making a case for Sixth Man of the Year. And if he keeps it up, literally nobody's going to be able to touch him. We'll talk about that. Andy and the Jokic brothers.
Yeah. Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Back better than ever with a new web interface for the start of the basketball season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online remains the number one spot for all basketball and football action this season. Head to the new updated desktop or mobile website. Sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on the first deposit. Use the promo code Locked On to receive said bonus. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, UFC, right down to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Bet Online, where the games start.
So we'll get to the Jokic brothers here in a second, because I know, Andy, this has been occupying most of the last 24 hours for you.
It's very exciting.
It is. Most people have seen the footage by now. But real quick, Carmelo Anthony. We talked about him on Monday's show after he helped lead the Lakers to the win over the Hornets. It is very early to start making proclamations about who is going to win postseason awards. We are 11 games into the Lakers season. Most teams have played 10, 11, 12 games at the most. That said, if Carmelo Anthony keeps up anything close to what he is doing now, through Monday's games, 17.5 points a night, shooting 52% from three-point range on 7 three-pointers a game. Three and a half rebounds, an assist, a block, almost a steal, playing, you know, reasonable defense and assuming the Lakers don't just tank out the season. There is literally no chance another person wins Sixth Man of the Year. It is a 0% chance, because the story of Carmelo Anthony is, as Sixth Man of the Year at age 37, at, you know, 2 years after being out of the league or what, I mean, all that stuff, is so good that I don't know who's sixth manning around the league. I don't know what other people are doing, and I don't care because they're not going to win the award.
Well, it's not just that Melo was out of the league a few seasons ago. He was out of the league specifically because of the perception that he would not fit in with a team doing things like being, oh, I don't know, your sixth man. Like, you know, everybody remembers when he first arrived in OKC and there was that press conference and he was asked about just the possibility, like really just floated, like the idea of coming off the bench. And he basically responded with double middle fingers. Like the idea that it was so ridiculous. Whoever asked that question should just go F themselves, because like, it's an insult to me, Carmelo Anthony. And, you know, what's funny is after that, truth be told, I think Melo actually did try to do a lot to adjust to what the Thunder needed from him.
Oh, for sure.
And by all accounts, he actually was very well liked within the organization, very well liked with his teammates, didn't even play that terrible. But that one moment, you know, combined with a lot of other things that have gone on in Melo's career, where he's been perceived as somebody who cares more about market and visibility and money and scoring than winning. All of those things ended up being encapsulated in that one moment. And it took that image rehab in Portland, I think, for Melo, I think, to kind of recognize truly, these are the things I need to do. But also, I think, for everybody to remember why the hell they loved Melo so much in the first place.
Yeah. And it is funny, too. Like, there's a certain amount of, like, Portland erasure going on here. Not erasure, you know, not the band, but like, we're erasing the 2 years in Portland. Like, he's been a productive player for the last few. Once he got back in the league, it was like, oh, all right, Carmelo can still play. Like, he's doing something above and
beyond.
But
last year
right
was
now.
The first year off the bench.
No, I understand that. But like, but my point is, he's done it. And it's almost like, sure, people are, you know, and so I mean, I think, you know, some of his sort of frustration is a little bit like, guys, it's like, I did this last year and I started the year before because they wanted me to. Like, you know, if they told him, we need you to come off the bench, come off the bench. But the story itself and the results are just staggering. And if you are a sixth man, so like Montrezl Harrell is crushing it right now.
Tyler Hero in Miami. He's been
Tyler
great.
Tyler Hero is crushing it in Miami. Trez in Washington. I think I said Washington. It doesn't matter. Like, it's over. It is a wrap. And I hope it happens, because God damn, it's cool. And I just, as your daily update through 8 game home, Carmelo Anthony is shooting 64.5% from 3-point range.
It's nuts.
7.5 per game. This is not low volume stuff. He's not taking like two. Like, I don't want him to take contested threes at all. Like, he took one where he tried to draw the foul in Monday's game. I'm like, no, it's going to lower your percentage. Don't do it. Like, I want this thing to be, I don't want him to take like half court heaves at the end of the quarter.
He took one against the Hornets that was incredibly contested and he made it. Like,
he did.
He has been in an absolute zone, particularly inside Staples Center. Like, the drop off anywhere but Staples Center, granted, very small size, sample size.
Three games on the road, he's shooting 6% from
right.
Three.
But I mean, let's just say he gets that to a lowly 30%, you know, something that would be pretty shitty, all things considered. The rest of these games are going to look pretty awesome. Plus, you got two at Staples against the Clippers.
All right, Andy, we only have a few minutes left, and I know you have some sort of like multimedia presentation put together on this Morris Jokic thing. If you missed it Monday night, with a couple minutes left in a 17-point game, Markieff Morris, who now, before old friend alert, now plays for the Miami Heat, took a very cheap shot at Nikola Jokic on what was described as a take foul, but no,
take your
not
life,
down
maybe.
17.
I mean, take your took, ribs.
Right. He took a cheap shot that was a foul.
Yes, he did.
Nikola Jokic responded with even cheaper shot, basically shoving the crap out of Morris, and you know, his head snapped back and all that
from
stuff.
From behind. Blindsided him.
And will eventually be suspended. Both guys were eventually received flagrant twos, and we'll see what happens. But Andy, it has led to a great rivalry on social media between people you would not expect. The floor is yours. I will sit back now.
The entire Heat organization after the game apparently went looking for the Denver Nuggets. You can see this photo of the team being held back by some bald dude in a blazer who I guess is security. They were apparently looking for Nikola Jokic. But you don't need to look for Nikola Jokic because his brothers will find you. And a Twitter account that was, I'm not joking, started Monday night, already has like 18,000 followers, just called at Jokic Brothers, tweeted to Markieff Morris at Mook Morris 2. You should leave this the way it is instead of publicly threatening our brother. Your brother made a dirty play first. If you want to take a step further, be sure we will be waiting for you, signed
Jokic. So this is towards Marcus, not Markieff.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. It is towards Marcus. Then Marcus responded, "You got the right ones. Believe that." Jokic Brothers responded, "I don't believe. I know that." Then Marcus responds, "Waited till bro turned his back. SMH noted with an emoji of a writing hand," to which the Jokic brothers responded, "You should leave this the way it is instead of publicly threatening our brother. Your brother made the dirty play first. If you want to make a step further, be sure we will be waiting for you to ! Jokic brothers." Again, just cutting and pasting this directly to Marcus Morris, making sure Marcus Morris saw it.
Like 3 minutes later, it's the same tweet.
Yeah. Exactly. Just verbatim same tweet, but just want to make sure, Marcus Morris, you saw this, even though it's been retweeted like a zillion times. We know you've seen it. We want to make sure you saw this directly from us. If you have not seen the Jokic brothers before, Nikola Jokic's brothers, here's one look at them. Two guys, heavily tatted with very scary bro haircuts. They are enormous. They are Nikola Jokic's size. Here's a photo from last year, I believe, or 2 years ago, when one of the brothers wanted to fight Devin Booker during a game because Book and Nikola Jokic started going at it. He had to be restrained. This is not a joke. He is wearing right now an all camo outfit with a Jokic jersey over it. Yeah. he's wearing.
It should be noted, like, it is not that the Morrises, the Mori, are little weaklings. These are not people I would tussle with.
Oh, no. There are guys in the league, Brian, that have reputations as fake tough guys. The Mori are not on that list.
I'll go ahead and chalk them up as tough guys.
Right, but I'm just saying, like,
the Jokic brothers, for people who don't know, are insane.
Yes, they are.
Like, Nikola Jokic almost didn't have a chance to become the MVP of the NBA, which he might win again this year. He's putting up mind-bogglingly good numbers because he was almost killed as a youth because his brothers used to throw knives at him.
Yes. This is from a story years ago that the great Lee Jenkins wrote in SI about Nikola Jokic from a friend of his. He remembered Nikola mainly as the little kid. His brother Strahinja used to terrorize, tossing him from one bed to another in the family's small apartment, often during heated games on a plastic mini hoop. "He once held down my arms and threw knives all around my head," Nikola added. "Punishment for refusing to climb a tree during a picnic." That was a little crazy.
Well, I mean, he knows what he did, but I'm just saying, like, you know, so like these are not, it's not a question of toughness. It's a question of these people are probably kind of nuts. And, like, you know, we think of Euro guys as being like soft dudes who don't like a lot of, we forget a lot of these people come from very rough places with, like,
including the Jokic's.
Yes. With constant war and poverty and, you know, like, the Euro should no longer be synonymous for soft. But anyway, I for one am looking forward to yes, the NBA should squash it. Nikola Jokic shouldn't retaliate. The Morrises shouldn't retaliate in Miami and next time they play, and so on and so forth.
No, F that. The league should be sanctioning a cage match between the Jokic's and half of the Heat.
But if by chance that doesn't take, I'm here to see what happens.
Okay. Speaking of that, Brian, I have a scenario for you. Uh-huh. On one side, I'm giving you the following members of the Miami Heat.
Okay.
Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry, Bam Adebayo, PJ Tucker, Udonis Haslem, who is still that guy, Markieff Morris, and 76-year-old Pat Riley, who back in the day was very, very tough and still intimidates the shit out of everyone.
Uh-huh.
On the other side, the Jokic brothers. Who do you got?
Just the Jokic brothers?
Yes.
That's a lot of volume.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jimmy Butler's no joke. I mean, I don't know if Bam Adebayo is a fighter, but I mean,
he's a big dude. He's a big dude. Kyle Lowry is definitely tough. Udonis Haslem is like the leader of the list.
I mean, do you need somebody to take a charge there?
No, you don't want to fuck with Udonis.
I'm not messing with Kyle Lowry either. I mean, but I, you know, he's tough. I might take the Heat guys just on volume, but that's.
Well, there's a lot of volume, though, with the Jokic's themselves.
Just like three. That's three on, like, seven.
The point being, it's harder to figure out than it might seem on the surface. Last question for you. The only person that the Jokic's are following on Twitter is Jamal Murray. That's all they follow?
That would make me nervous.
I
wouldn't like that. I don't want that.
Jamal,
I don't mind being followed by that. But if they followed like 100 people, okay, fine.
Murray and Nikola Jokic, by all accounts, are really close friends.
No,
he
I don't
would
need
still
that.
Make me a little nervous.
I don't need that. All right. So, all right. Well, we'll be back after Wednesday's game. Who are they playing, Andy?
Miami.
That's Miami. Okay. With no Markieff Morris, presumably. But we'll see. And this is going to be a good game. Like, if the Lakers could come back and steal another game against a quality opponent that's playing well, Miami. Open the week with the best record in the Eastern Conference, I should say. That'd be a big win for them. So we'll see how that goes. Plenty more to talk about on the Locked On Lakers YouTube page. And again, thanks for making us your first listen of every day. We'll see you on Thursday.